Okay, EdTech Club members, can you feel it? Can you feel the sensation of summer creeping up on us? It is coming, and with that, for a lot of educators across the country and around the world, that means preparing for a return to in-person instruction or a return to a full semester of in-person instruction. And after having flipped the way we teach for the better part of a year, if not more, a lot of educators are wondering, what is it going to look like when we go back to in-person instruction? And what lessons can we take from this time of forced virtual learning? Big questions, I know. It's usually helpful to have a guide on these kinds of things. And that's why, for this week's guest speaker, we invited in Dr. Stepan Mekatarian. He's an administrator with Glendale Unified School District in California. And his job is to assess data, assess the tech, and assess the ways we've been using those things. And when remote learning started, he started taking notes. He started paying attention to the lessons learned, the positives we can take from this time of remote learning, and how we can apply them moving forward. And it just so happens he's written a book about this. And this week, as our guest speaker, he's going to talk to us about this topic, in particular about blended learning, about ways we can use in-person and remote instruction, ways we can use that to create differentiations for different learning styles and different learners, ways we can meet the needs of students, give them voice and choice, and all the things that we know will accelerate their learning and improve their outcomes. But like I said, it's a lot to put all together. So we're going to take the time to have a conversation about blended learning, differentiation, formative assessment, and more. All the lessons we've learned from remote learning and how we will take them back into the classroom and beyond. So that's what we'll be talking about with Dr. Mekatarian this week in the EdTech Club. And it all starts right now. Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch. As I said, this week's guest speaker joining the club to elucidate us, Dr. Stepan Mekatarian. He's going to take us through what he's observed in remote learning, some of the benefits, and some of the things we may do moving forward. But it's a big conversation with a lot of juicy topics, so I won't take up any more of your time. Here's our conversation with Dr. Mekatarian.
My name is Stepan Mekatarian. I'm the Interim Director for Innovation, Instruction, Assessment, and Accountability at Glendale Unified. And in that position, I do all of the district's data analysis, their compliance with assessments, and also instruction specifically with technology due to my background in blended learning. So lots of different hats.
Yeah, that's a long title, and it covers a lot of things, but I guess the connecting thread is that there's technology and there's data collection and analysis and giving you an understanding of where students are at. And so you have this background in blended learning. I believe previously you worked with the Los Angeles Unified School District specifically on blended learning. And so for people who have heard this term, have maybe tried a few things that have been described as blended learning, maybe they have an instructional coach at their school that keeps bugging them about this idea of blended learning. What is blended learning from your point of view? How do you describe it to people when you're talking about what you do?
Blended learning is a form of an approach to instruction that utilizes technology just like any other resource, like a textbook, but one that's specifically geared toward giving students a little bit more autonomy when it comes to choosing the direction in which they go with, how they learn, catering to different learning modalities, giving them some choice in how they can answer a particular prompt, and just accessing it as a resource. So in a blended learning classroom, it's not like sometimes folks picture like a computer lab where all the students are silently working on a computer. It's not like that at all. It's actually a very interactive environment where there are some computers and students jump on the computers in some stations. collaborate in person with their peers and others. There are many different models for blended learning. One is the station rotation model, where you can picture a room full of stations, which a lot of teachers already implement, and picture computers at just some of those stations. There's a flipped classroom model, where students do take in the lesson at home using devices and then come back to school to demonstrate mastery and to build on their learning, almost like essentially doing the homework part at home, but in a more rigorous and heightened way, because they have access to their teacher, they have access to their classrooms when they're working toward demonstrating mastery. So many different forms, but the one key line that sort of goes through all the models is technology is being used in a way to really enhances learning. And the main ways to enhance learning is by creating more space for rigorous prompts, rigorous opportunities for learning, and also to differentiate. So imagine like the most amazing teacher you can think of, and he or she can probably differentiate at a few levels, have enrichment, have intervention. But with blended learning, if the teacher is using technology in a way that's really thoughtfully planned, you're differentiating for every single student. Every single student has an ability to have the learning meet them where they are, and that's going to dramatically increase engagement, because no one's going to be bored or frustrated. It's not too easy or too hard. It's just where they are, and it helps them achieve mastery at their own pace, which is ideally what we want.
Yeah, I remember, over the past, I'd say 10 to 15 years, we've heard terms like blended learning, flipped learning, coming to the forefront. I remember as a college student, which now, didn't seem like that long ago, but now I'm starting to realize it was a little while ago. The idea of a flipped classroom was becoming very popular, especially at that college level, because it was very easy to send everyone off with the material and say, review your readings. And then when we come in and we have that very limited class time, we'll use it to talk about the subject matter and to dive into it in more depth. Is that kind of the approach generally with blended learning? I know you use the term rigor, which I hear a lot in education, but I'm not an educator. So how do you define that and how do you work that in?
Think of rigor as just prompts that go beyond simply recalling information, or imagine a prompt in which a teacher is not going to get 35 of the same answer, and ideally that there's opportunities for exploration, for students to bring in their own perspective, and basically to be able to bounce ideas off each other to really better understand the concept. And that can only be done with specific prompts that sort of help make that happen. So think of, for example, let's say the prompt is you're going to design a bridge. And in that one activity, you can have students use devices to explore, what type of bridges are out there. Why do bridges look differently? Shouldn't there really be one way that's best for designing a bridge? And so do some exploration there. Maybe connect with their own lives. Can they think of any bridges that they were, that they grew up near? What significance did that have for them? From there, they can think of specific skills that they're going to need, let's say for math, in order to be able to construct that bridge. So that's when a teacher can use devices to have students build mastery in those particular skills to then apply them to this project. Once they design the bridge collaboratively, they can then share that with their peers, get feedback. The peers are actively listening as the students are explaining why they chose the particular bridge layout that they did. Almost like a mini dissertation defense, where they really need to know what they're doing in order to be able to answer the questions. At the same time, you're building active listening skills for students. At the same time, you're giving students opportunities to demonstrate how they designed the bridge in different ways. Some of them might have to do a live presentation. Others might record. Others might use visuals that they developed using graphic design programs. It's really endless. Ultimately, the students are all learning the same skills, but it's a very holistic approach where the math is being combined with reading and research, history, a lot of other pieces coming in together, and it more closely mimics what life beyond school looks like. So I think it's doing a better job of preparing students for what's next. And at the same time, because they're having to work collaboratively, developing their presentation skills, their opportunities for leadership as they lead their teams, it's just really, really enhancing that learning experience beyond just simply draw the bridge, do the calculation on why it should look the way it is. So to me, as a teacher, it's also more exciting because I'm going to get 30, 35 very different responses to the prompt, but all ones where students can, in different ways, can demonstrate their mastery. So this approach has, you know, it's been more of a niche approach for the last 10 years. You'll might hear about some teacher in one of the classrooms on your campus who's, you know, using a technology or a blended learning approach. But now that, because of the pandemic, virtually everyone had this crash course in technology, I think this is the time when it's going to stop being something that few teachers do to something that just becomes mainstream, only because the teachers who are all coming back to campus are not going to just throw away all the technology skills and approaches and strategies that they use for the last year. They're going to have to think about which elements that I love and I'm going to hold on to, even though we're in person, and which ones am I happy to get rid of. And so by reflecting carefully on the best of distance learning and the best of what they used to do before distance learning, I think they're basically priming themselves for a blended learning classroom, which is going to be great for everybody.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the outset, you know, maybe prior to the pandemic, and we look at these things where, and I think this also happened during a time when the kind of one-to-one device programs were starting to get rolled out in schools, began to be an emphasis on ensuring high-speed internet connectivity at schools and at homes. We see a lot of that push all happening at the same time, and there was a sense that we could use this information technology and connected devices then to expand, you know, the time we have with the material, essentially, the time students get to have to think about it. And then kind of, you're not spending all your time just on knowledge. You can build up, you can get comprehension, you can get analysis, and you can start to get, you know, synthesis, all those higher level thinking and learning skills. But something you mentioned as well, too, that was on people's minds, and I think continues to get played with now, is this idea that you've got this general setup, this blended setup, where you can use technology, you can use your in-class time, and you can find ways to maximize that learning time. You can also integrate almost any kind of model of pedagogy or classroom technique that you like. You know, you mentioned station rotation, and there's the 5E model, there's the jigsaw model, there's all these things that teachers talk about. Those can all be used in a blended scenario, right?
Absolutely. So with blended learning, the content itself is not changing, or the strategies are not changing. It's just another resource that could be used to help students access. So for students, let's say, who are particularly visual, by having technology in the room and creating visual opportunities for them to understand the content that they wouldn't be able to do without technology, you're incorporating blended learning. So it's kind of in the name right there, blended. You're blending the in-person learning with the device. And honestly, between those two worlds, you've got most of the learning modalities covered. I mean, you got visual and auditory, you know, you can play things back in terms of differentiation. Think about the power of being able to have information translated using the devices. There are things that the device can't do, tactile learning, kinesthetic. So those are where the in-person comes in. But by incorporating them carefully together, you are able to reach every student. And you're also, that's part of the process of differentiation to make sure that all students get access to the content. So there's a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to planning a lesson like this. There's a lot of moving parts. It's just, as I say, it already sounds like it's a lot of work. But the idea is the teacher really gets, you know, is the exhausting part is setting up these lessons. But during the lesson, the teacher is a facilitator. Students know where to go from one to the other. They know where to get help. We describe strategies for students to be able to get tech help so that the teacher is not doing that in the class. Like one thing we do is we have QR codes, let's say, that are in the room that the teacher set up where a student who's having technical issues with, let's say, logging in can scan that and it goes to a document where all their login information is waiting for them, or screencasts on, you know, how-to videos on how to get support. So once you take care of all those technical hurdles, it really just becomes comes down to the learning, and the teacher is having a blast because they're walking around the room being able to answer really tough questions the students are asking, finding ways to sort of extend their thinking. It's very exciting. It just takes a lot of work to sort of set it up. And so we really encourage collaboration between teachers to help sort of share that load. And we've also set up a program this year in which we In anticipation of our eventual return to campus, we trained an instructional technology leader at every school site using the SAMR model. For anyone not familiar, SAMR is substitution, augmentation, modification, redefinition. These are the four levels in which you can use technology to enhance learning. So substitution is the first level is basically just where you're replacing the paper pencil with a laptop. So typing instead of writing. It doesn't really add much. And then ultimately, as you move to augmentation, modification, redefinition, now you're doing learning opportunities that you wouldn't be able to do without a device. Some things where you're reaching out to a larger world, things where you're creating blogs with videos and connecting to experts in the field and so on. So we trained our instructional leaders so that as they do this work, as once we come back, we have a lead on each campus who can help prepare other teachers for this blended learning approach, knowing full well that the devices are now there. The teachers and students both have had tremendous exposure to technology. So we want to make sure we take advantage of that and not just say, well, now we're back. You know, you have these devices. We hope you use them in the best way possible. But we are being much more methodical about making sure that they maximize their use and don't not just use them for things like communication, which they had to for distance learning.
Of course, the pandemic and the lockdown that comes with it, sort of any blending you were doing got unblended. The constituent parts kind of got separated out again because you were forced to work remote. I know a lot of people across the country are already back or starting to go back. So you mentioned you've started some new things in this past year. I mean, what are the highlights to you in terms of lessons learned from a fully virtual time? You know, the positives and, you know, the potential pitfalls, the things you're now thinking about in your role as you begin to think about coming back to campus. What are the things you want to carry with you from this?
Sure. So for us, our elementary schools actually opened a few weeks ago, middle school about a week ago, and high school last week. So we are starting to come back. And I think a lot of our efforts over the last year are starting to slowly pay off. And initially, of course, there's lots of logistical hurdles. But as those sort of dissipate, we're seeing a lot of the lessons we learned from the last year really start to have an impact for us. So some examples, you know, one thing I'm the data lead for our district. And so one of the things I used to do before the pandemic was meet with school teams, with teacher leaders and in the summer and go over their summative data from the previous year and sort of discuss with them and sort of help them develop an action plan for their current year. For example, where did our students thrive? Which areas did they struggle with? How are we going to address that this year? When during the school year are you going to tackle this area? So almost like a laying out the plan for the year. And we would set up professional development around that as well so that they can get their data throughout the course of the year, know what that data means, and kind of make sure that they are sort of iterating again. If they need to, based on data, make adjustments, they can do that. This year, we didn't have any summative data. So there were no state tests. Many other summative data points were gone. So one of the things we learned, which is a fantastic lesson, one that we've sort of been trying to bring more to the forefront for the last few years anyway, is the importance of formative assessment. So in the absence of summative data, we said, well, let's use formative data from the current year to drive instruction. And then it also addressed another concern, which is how do you give a high stakes test when students are remote? How do you trust the results? And we said, don't worry about high stakes tests right now. We'll focus on formative data. There's formative data is not high stakes for anybody. It's just more about informing you, the teacher, about where students are doing well, where they're struggling. So let's really emphasize that. And that emphasis, because of necessity, grew in use. And that's something that we're hoping is going to continue even as students return. For me, formative data in general is most critical. Because it takes the guesswork out of where we need support. Like in California, we have a state dashboard that the state produces, giving you like the year-end metrics of how your district and your schools performed in a variety of areas. It's usually 6 months after the school year is over, so there's not too much we can do with it. We're the only district I know of that's created an in-house replica of the same approach, except with formative data. So like I can go in live and see if the school year ended today, who would be my chronically absent students, and I can actually get their names, see what I can do to follow up, check with their families, see if it's an issue of a ride, if they're what exactly is going on, to make that personal connection to the person behind the data. That's something that we're very proud of, and it really drives the idea that we are really want to be focused on formative data. And I think that's one of the big takeaways we've come away with. The other one, of course, as I mentioned earlier, is differentiation. So we've seen that students learn in a variety of ways. That's become extra clear when we're in distance learning. We can see that some students really thrive in the distance learning environment, while others struggle. And so, you know, what's the difference between those two students? Why does one student really thrive and the other one is having so many challenges? That gets into the question of their learning styles. You know, every kid learns differently. And so we've learned a lot about what that looks like. And as a result, been able to provide professional development around differentiation. And that's another takeaway that we're hoping is going to really carry forward, even as we return. Because ultimately, we want all of our students to have access to the content. We want it to be at their level and in their style. And I know that sounds very idealistic, but, you know, is that possible to do in a classroom? We believe it is, if we harness instructional technology effectively and have it meld in with the teacher's instruction and plan in the appropriate way. So we're really excited for what's next. We're not happy that we had to go through this year. Of course, it's been an immensely challenging one for everyone, but I think there is a very thick silver lining from that experience, and that is those two big takeaways.
Yeah, and it makes sense. It kind of confirms some assumptions people in the education world might have taken into this event, this pandemic, is that, you know, formative assessment is very powerful and can help you advance a student and help them meet or exceed the learning goals. And of course, that differentiating for students with different learning styles and different learning needs is going to probably be a kind of, you know, net positive for you, is going to, you know, improve those outcomes that we're looking for. And so in this process, you've started to gather these takeaways. And now you've written a book essentially about blended learning. And I think the focus is on professional development for educators. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I was part of our district leadership team that helped design the transition to distance learning. And, you know, for anyone who was in that position and in their own district, they know how intense it was, right? We needed, it all happened very quickly. No one saw it coming. All of a sudden, schools shut down. We were distance learning. We had to prepare our teachers, our students, our community parents on, you know, crash course in technology, crash course into effective instruction in a distance learning model. And it was all happening very quickly. So while we were going through that process, one of the first things I thought about was, This transition we're going in right now to distance is a shock to the system. We know, though, that at some point, whether it be 6 months, a year from now, there's going to be another transition back. And I don't want to go through this again in terms of this sudden, like, scramble to figure out what's the ideal, learning tools and ideal strategies for what's next. So right when we went through that transition to distance learning, I started doing some research and started writing a book then about what this transition back would look like. It was anticipation for this eventual return. I'm lucky in that my dissertation was on blended learning, and there was a lot there that just needed the right forum, I guess, in which to sort of pull those ideas and be able to present them to the larger public. And so I pulled a lot of information from that research as well. And the idea behind it is to create a playbook for school teams to think about. It's a very interactive book with lots of templates that teams can use. And the idea is, how do you take, reflect on the experiences from the last year, determine what really worked well, just pull those pieces, and then combine that with what you know has worked really well for you in your classroom before distance learning. Bring those two worlds together, and essentially you have an ideal blended learning classroom. Blended learning is not a new idea, but I think the fact that now we have so many people, virtually everyone, who has this sudden exposure to instructional technology, combining that with those in-person best practices is essentially, I think, what we needed for that ultimate blend to take place. And so I feel like teachers are now poised to incorporate that work in their classroom, not because they're going to say, I'm going to start adopting blended learning, but just the fact that they already use technology. And as I said earlier, I don't see anyone saying, I just want to go right back to what it was. I'm going to, well, all these things that we picked up, I'm just going to put that to the side. I think there's a lot of things that are like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. And perhaps, you know, students really appreciated some elements of learning, and they shared that with their teacher. And that might be something that the teacher carries forward as well. As an example, a lot of our teachers started recording their lessons. By recording their lessons, students were able to, you know, watch it, rewind, pause, access it if they missed class. That right there is a perfect skill to make the transition to a flipped classroom model, for example. So same thing with station rotation. We used a lot of breakout rooms. Imagine now with formative data, creating breakout rooms that are differentiated based on student needs. And when you're in the classroom, you may not be using a breakout room, but you could still have a station rotation model where students physically move to different stations. So again, just these are just two examples of how experiences from distance learning can carry over and basically enhance classroom instruction. So it's very exciting, and I'm hopeful that the book is going to help teams sort of walk through that process. I think the schools that are reflective about what happened and are reflective about what worked and what didn't are going to see really big gains in their student success. But I think it just needs to be very methodical. We're all very busy. It's all happening very quickly. So unless you're being very intentional about that reflective process as a team, it's very easy for a lot of the takeaways from the last year to sort of fall to the wayside and us to go back to right where we were.
Yeah, I can totally see that. It's like if you ever run an event or something with like a limited time span, when you're done, you feel like, oh, I have 100 ideas for the next time I do this. And then when you show up for the next time, it's like, oh, I should have written all that down, which is what you did.
That was the idea.
if I'm an educator out here and I like this idea, but I know, as you say, that I need to do this methodically, and I am busy and I can't keep it all in my head. I like all these ideas, but I don't want to have to sketch out my own process. What is the book called and how do I get my hands on it?
So the book is called The Central Blended Learning PD Planner, where classroom practice meets distance learning. And it's, as I said earlier, it's very interactive. It's full of templates and walks you through the entire process. So I know that we're just recording audio, but there's a flow to the process of the reflection part, the part where it connects to collaborative learning and constructivist thinking, where students can make meaning through the experiences that we create, and then ultimately how that can impact instruction. The book, as the title is, you know, says, includes PD in there. It is very much about professional development, about planning what that will look like for the next year. So it walks the team through designing a professional development program that's going to help every teacher on that campus reflect on that process, pull their best practices from the last year, and ultimately get the training they need in order to make it so that every classroom you walk in, there's high quality instruction using instructional technology. The book is available both on Amazon and at the Corwin website, and I can provide a coupon code for anyone who's ordering from the Corwin site for, I think, like $5 or $6 off. So the hope is that teams are reading it together and sort of going through it as almost like a study where they can to fill it in throughout. And you'll see that there's codes throughout where you can scan any of the tables so that you can get digital versions of them so that you can add it to your school plan.
I can hear the ears pricking up of instructional technologists and coaches and teachers. So it looks like a good game plan. Can confirm there were flow charts. That's what I saw, at least that much, listeners. Well, that's very cool. It's really excellent. I'm really glad we had the opportunity to share this. I won't take up much more of your time, but if you have a parting message for the educators listening or a parting thought you want to impart, or, you know, follow me on Twitter or whatever. So, now's the time.
The big plug I'd say is, I know it's been a rough year, but think about, I think that, as I said, there's a huge opportunity here. I think this could be a place where we really see education pivot. And so I'd say lean into that and put aside the frustrations of the last year and really use that. Think of it like a boot camp, a mandatory boot camp you had to go through. All of a sudden, you had to go through this year-long boot camp where you had to wake up every morning, 5 a.m. You're always sweaty and muddy, and it's been miserable. But now that you're done and you're in this phenomenal shape, what are you going to do with that? And that's kind of the hope, is that you know, this book will be an inspiration to do that. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Step On Mech, STEPANMEK. And you can catch me on LinkedIn as well. You can also go to StepanMkhitaryan.com. I assume, Andrew, that your link will have my spelling of that last name because it doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yes, we will definitely fact check that one before we go.
There you go. StepanMkhitaryan.com. It's got tons of resources, presentations, and other information that I think will be helpful.
Okay, folks, I know we could probably talk about these topics forever, but you're going to want to get to work on your related readings, the homework related to this meeting of the EdTech Club. So for all the links Stepan mentioned, go ahead and check out the show notes, the description for this episode. You'll find all the relevant links there. And while you're out looking for good ideas, if you're a regular club member, I know you've heard this one before, but it's worth reminding you, there is still time to register for TCEA's Elementary Technology Conference online starting June 13th. It's going to have all kinds of research-backed, tech-driven ways for you to engage your elementary students. So go ahead and learn more and get registered at elementary.tcea.org. And always keep up with the latest of our upcoming events, lunch and learn webinars, and more. Follow us on social media. Look for TCEA. And don't forget to spread the word about this podcast, the EdTech Club. If you really like it, drop us a review and a rating. That helps spread the word. Make sure you're subscribed in the course. Tell your friends and colleagues. But as usual, we're running up against the bell, so I'm going to call time on this one and let you go. But I hope you will join us again next week for another meeting of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.